Thank you very much, Jenny and Laura, for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we're going to have a very interesting conversation about a whole host of issues, but why don't we just get started a little bit about your own background and how did you get involved with the Crisis Nursery?
Well, I was a practicing social worker for about 16 years in the community before I joined Crisis Nursery. And a lot of the work I did was child abuse treatment. I worked for a private agency that had a counseling contract with DCFS, and it was with families whose kids had not gone into foster care, but that they were open cases for DCFS. One of the things I certainly realized as I did that work was that most families that we saw didn't set out to hurt their kids, but their kids did get hurt, and the kids wanted to be with their families. They might want to be with their family and have their family be a little more not as violent with them. So there were lots of issues around that. I'd always watched Crisis Nursery as it started to grow in a very fledgling way. The Crisis Nursery started in 1984. At that time, I couldn't really get involved with it because they, for various reasons. But at one point then, 13 years ago, I got a call from one of their board members who said, we're looking for a new director. We've had a director almost every year or every other year for the last 10 years. And could you help? And I said, wow, I can do that. My daughter just got married. She just graduated from college. I don't have to worry about a lot of things, and I could do that, and I'd love to do that. So it's sort of been a real mission of love for me to be able to work with families or offer a service to families that can help before they really get in trouble. Mm-hmm. And then can help in any area, mm-hmm. Even accidents or hospitalizations, things that you wouldn't associate with, mm-hmm. you know, a regular definition of child abuse or neglect.
Do you know how it got started? What was the impetus?
Mm-hmm. The impetus actually in this community was twofold. Families were coming into the emergency rooms, especially at Burnham Hospital, at the City Hospital, and bringing their children when they had some kind of emergency health problem. And the nurses would end up basically caring for the kids because a lot of these families had no resources available to them. And at the same time, there were a couple of deaths in the state of children from child abuse. So those two things came together. I believe that a few years prior to 83, the School of Social Work had also done some studies
at the university
mm-hmm. here, had done some studies and determined that like a crisis nursery, and some did exist already in the nation, would really be helpful for us in our community and tried to get people interested. But actually, the nurses, the social workers at Burnham and other hospitals and community people that were interested, community folks, community groups, mm-hmm. Junior League, Exchange Club, many, many groups were very interested and worked very hard to get a crisis nursery off the ground. And mm-hmm. There was no government money involved, so I know Junior League put in some money every year the first couple of years and helped with getting the paperwork to get it started as a 501c3. But this was the impetus in our community. Mm-hmm. Families existed that had a need.
Are there other places like this around the country?
There are.
Or in the state? I think you mentioned there were others in the state.
Well, actually, we have five in the state of Illinois that follow the model that we follow and that we feel is a true crisis nursery, and that is 24-hour a day, 7 days a week, emergency crisis child care and follow-up services. Mm-hmm. A crisis is a Band-Aid. Wherever you look at it, whatever you're going to do at that moment, it's like a Band-Aid. And then there are a number of families that only need that Band-Aid, but there's a number of families that need much more remedial work. Mm-hmm. So our nursery then provides back follow-up support, you know, post-crisis work. And the five nurseries here in the state of Illinois all provide that. And if you're interested, they're in Peoria, Springfield, Bloomington, Rockford, and here in Urbana.
Mm-hmm. I notice that you have about six different categories of crises in your brochure here. sudden illness, hospitalization, accident or fire, domestic violence, inability to cope, and personal problems. Can you elaborate a little bit on what those are and how they get initiated? Laura?
Sure. We have many different reasons for placement into crisis care, and that just captures a few of them. The reasons for placements span from domestic violence to a crisis for daycare and needing daycare in order to go to your employment that you didn't expect to get on the day of the interview, mm-hmm. or waiting for CCRS to jump in with their subsidy so that you're able to pay for daycare. And within each of the reasons for placement, starting with respite, there is a continuum of need or of importance in each of those placements. So for a respite, you could have a family picking up the phone and saying, I don't feel like our arms are safe to care for a child, to anything from a family trying to build their life back up again from being homeless and needing a planned respite in order to do that. And that happens in each of those categories, the illness, the mental health issue, the substance abuse, the crisis daycare, and all the other ones you mentioned there in the brochure.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we just go ahead and do this up front? We'll do it again later. If a family or a parent or friend of a family thinks that they could use this service, how do they go about contacting you?
They pick up the phone. They dial 337-2730, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They don't think twice about it. We see as asking help as a sign of strength, and one of our crisis care workers will be there on the second ring.
Mm-hmm. I think you also have a website?
We do.
It says www.crisisnursery.net. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are the biggest challenges that you face in your program?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges that all crisis nurseries face in social services in general is certainly fiscal. Our crisis nursery happens to be in a very wonderful, generous community that really supports it, and 65% of our income comes from the community and charitable giving. We have the rest of that comes from government contracts, and we have actually 8 different kinds of government monies that come in, some of which are local government monies. We prefer this, although it's a lot more work. It's really harder to bring in dollars that way, but we prefer that so that the government can't tell us how to run our program for our community, so we can meet our community's
needs.
You
mean local private funding you prefer?
Yes.
To have a larger percentage of?
We definitely. 65% of my budget, which is at this year $593,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of money. It's very expensive to run a 24/7 service, mm-hmm. and to have the trained professional staff there, and then to do all the kinds of things we do with kids. So, and families. So that's a big challenge. Another challenge, and we can elaborate more on funding later if you'd like, but the other, I think, really large challenge is that we are seeing more and more children that are in crisis, more and more children that are reeling from their things that are happening in their environment when mm-hmm. they're little, and violence, tragedies. It's mind-boggling what you see families come in, the problems they have, how it's affecting the kids, even the smallest, the youngest children. And we serve children from newborn through 5. We're seeing more violence. We're seeing more behavior issues with children. We're seeing more withdrawal for children. So, you know, those kinds of issues, I think, are things that we definitely want to be addressing more. So that comes down to parent-child interaction. That's very important. It really seems to be a struggle for some people. And it's not an income-based issue.
Let's just pause over this a little bit. I used to be on a local school board, and I recall 15-some-odd years ago people talking about a bubble coming through the system with lots of children, particularly with respect to the spread of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been 20 years, 15, 20 years that this has been going on. And you're saying that from where you sit, the trend lines are still mm-hmm. going up significantly.
Wouldn't you say that, Laura?
Definitely.
Yep.
And how would you account for that?
I think it's harder out there for families. I think families are really struggling to make it, and they're not paying as much attention, maybe, to their mm-hmm. Needs of their kids, or they think that their needs of their children are different than maybe what the kids really need.
So economic stresses.
Economic stresses.
Mm-hmm. Support for them.
Stresses to get ahead. You know, I guess, you know, I'm in my 60s. I sort of think that our values when we were younger were we more basic than what mm-hmm. they seem to be. The cycle seems to be coming around now is more what you have than what you are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that affects, it molds children in having a different kind of social interaction.
I see. Well, maybe we can come back to that a little bit, but why don't we spend a little bit more time on what you do, what your staff does. Before we do that, though, let me just reiterate, if you'd like to call in and talk with either one of our guests this afternoon about Crisis Nursery, our number locally is 333-9455, 333-WILL, or you can also call out of the area 1-800-222-9455. Well, how do you run the program? What's the mechanics of it?
The mechanics of it. Mm-hmm. Back to the funding base.
Well, staff, administration, someone walks in the door, what do they see first, and what are the procedures for?
Well, Laura, why don't you address if somebody walks in the door as a client?
Okay.
What they...
Great. So programmatically, how the nursery is run, we have two different components, a crisis care component and a family component. When they walk in the door, it's usually because they're looking for crisis care. And they'll walk in the door and they'll be greeted in a home-like environment with lead children's worker staff, children's worker staff, and a family worker.
Mm-hmm.
Family worker will assess the situation, will do crisis counseling, problem solve, figure out their next steps, where they need to go, and will schedule crisis care in the crisis care program.
Immediate crisis care.
Mm-hmm. So that could be anything from a few hours to a few days. And it is short term, and there can be a repeat visit if needed. And many of our clients are in the situation where a repeat visit is a must. And we see that family for a period of time, several times we see those children and that family until their family, till their situation stabilized again.
Well, let's continue this a little bit, how the program looks to users and its administrative structure, but we do have a caller. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question?
Yes, I do. I want to ask this question. How does the staff train? I think it's a wonderful program, and it sounds like you can get help immediately. How is the staff trained?
Well, as Laura, as the program supervisor, oversees that. She's a licensed clinical social worker, and so she basically oversees that whole program. But we have been we have a philosophy of childcare that comes out of early childhood and has a little combination of social work in it. And we do our training on the floor with our staff ourselves because there is no curriculum for what we're doing, that's a written curriculum. But it is very, most of the staff come out of early childhood or come out of social work, and have some experience with children. But we do our own training.
Okay. It sounds like the work you do is absolutely wonderful. I just wondered if there's overlap. I just was last week at Cunningham Home. Is there any overlap with that program?
I think that we're really totally different setup. From what my understanding of Cunningham is that it's a long-term care for children, and ours is short-term, non-appointment crisis care for children that are still with their families. So I think we're sort of kindred in spirit. but a whole different service delivery and a whole different need.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Well, let's pick up on that a little bit. Laura, I understand that you welcome volunteers, you might want to talk a little bit about what a volunteer would do and what the rest of the staff does.
We do welcome volunteers and community volunteers as well as students from the University of Illinois. We have started a new training about a year and a half ago, and it is combining our philosophy with a philosophy that's called PIWI, Parents Interacting with Infants. And we've been combining and rewriting that philosophy to fit crisis nursery and what we do there, and training volunteers to adhere to this philosophy while they're there so that we can improve the interactions between the parents and the children and the volunteers and the children and the staff and the children, et cetera. The volunteers that we need are up to 150 every week we see coming through our door. We start at 7 a.m. until 11 p.m. when the children are hopefully snug in bed and fast asleep. Mm-hmm. And they come in every 2 hours to help us support the children that we see in the program. In the crisis care program, we can care for up to 12 children at any one time. And we have two staff on the floor, a children's worker and a lead children's worker. And with two to three volunteers, we can keep a ratio at 3-1, which is a need be with what we're trying to do and how we're trying to support these children and the bonds we're making with them. A 3-1 ratio is a necessity, if not sometimes a 1-1. And we want to make sure these volunteers are ready to handle the situations that might come up during their time there, mm-hmm. so that they want to come back, so it feels positive to them as well, even if the children aren't always having the most positive or easy to handle feelings or experiences. We want to teach them how to deal with them and validate the children's experience and their feelings while they're there.
I don't think we've said this yet. Maybe I missed it, but you're dealing with children from birth to 5 years of age.
Correct.
And that cutoff is defined how?
By our license through the Department of Children and Family Services.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Some nurseries in the state actually do serve older children. We had to make a decision at the very beginning of the age category that we were going to be applying for our license, and we're licensed through DCFS and the state. For us, being a very small nursery, in very limited funding, there are two areas. One is the developmental stages of children and the way they change. Going up to six kept us in a category that we felt would be best for the group of children that might be with us at any given time. Then you also have the issue of school. We don't have a way to get children back and forth to school. There's those kinds of things if they're with us for a day or two. So I think those are some of the reasons why we stop at six.
And oftentimes the question comes in, so what do you do with a family who has children older than six? And we're always able to work with the family and problem solve and be part of the plan so that the situation can be positively approached. So we would watch the younger children that are harder to place because they're not in school and they don't have classmates that families would be fine taking on for a night or two. Mm-hmm. And we can care for the younger children or work with the family to make a placement possibly out of state or in another a town with family or friends that would be able to care for the older children. But we never leave the family without light, without caring for the entire situation and all the children in mind. The family is a complete unit.
I wanted to talk a little bit about parent support and parent education just a minute, but just to finish up on the volunteers, what would someone expect if they showed up and volunteered? What kind of training do you put them through?
Well, what we'd want them to do is call in first, and then they would go through a short screening over the phone with our volunteer coordinator, Kim Gollings. And they would call 337-2731. And then they would sign up for an orientation that lasts an hour and a half approximately. Kim would take them through the necessary paperwork they'd have to do and give them a tour and let them know who their supervisor would be on shift. Then they would sign up for a shift as you would a job. And we'd expect them every week on Tuesday, let's say, from 2 to 4. Mm-hmm. On their first shift, we are working on a volunteer training video right now that would show them exactly what was expected of them and how they would handle different situations and where they could go to answer get questions answered or have further training and also to what to expect as far as their ongoing training on the job, their supervision and their feedback that they would get while they were there during their two-hour period of time. Because they are learning while they're there, mm-hmm. and they continue to learn. And so that video and workbook would be used during their first time at the crisis nursery, their initial day. And then after that, they would be on the floor with the children. They'd be assigned children. They would know the lead children's worker and the children's worker. They would be working with these children during the time of day, depending on when they came in, so morning activities, afternoon, evening, on very home-like activities most of the time, and then developmentally appropriate activities while they're playing on the floor, engaging in social-emotional readings that we do, and also, you know, being put to bed and bathed and being read to and snuggled in bed at night. And these volunteers would know what to expect and have the routine down and help with those activities. You know, it's interesting because we always, the first mission is to make sure these children feel safe and secure,
right.
and to build that bond of trust. And then we always say we have arms to hold these children and then an environment that just invites them to grow and explore and to feel competent.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to support that.
I would imagine that some folks contemplating this might be concerned about, are there some problems that some children bring that are beyond their ability to handle? Or I'm sure you would be trained to make that judgment. Are there some children who you just can't deal with?
No.
None?
There's not.
Mm-hmm.
We have some limitation on medical needs.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as emotionally or behaviorally, we're seeing the children that daycares are saying, asking not to come back.
I see.
We're seeing them. They're coming to us. We have an environment that supports them and really listens to what they're saying to us and listens to their needs. So we'll give them one-on-one care, and we'll help them figure out what it is that they're trying to say to us with their behaviors.
And that, the kind of way we approach those children, because there are other children that are not acting out in the sense that those kids might be acting out,
mm-hmm.
is also to keep those other kids safe. So I
exactly.
think that sort of speaks mm-hmm. to your question, too, about, you know, how do you manage all that together
mm-hmm.
in the house? And our house, and I'd really like to invite people to come over and see the nursery and see what we do and how we handle things. But our house is at 1309 West Hill in Urbana, which is directly in back of Provena's emergency entrance. It's not a really very big house, but it's a very open space inside. It's a very warm, friendly house and comfortable. So, but we have a storytelling room. We have a little learning center room. We have two different active play areas and some and bedrooms, so that we can basically assign space and activities to children as to what their needs are,
mm-hmm.
and that's really it's a management issue in
are
that
there
regard.
Any minimal criteria for accepting volunteers? Do you do background checks or?
Mm-hmm. We do. Mm-hmm. Volunteers need to be 18 years of age. They need to have background checks. They need to do a series of paperwork for our records, and they need to have a medical
fingerprinting,
and then a medical mm-hmm. TB and an updated medical record. So, and then we accept them.
Age?
If they
what's the age range of volunteers?
We have volunteers from 18 years of age to 65, 70,
mm-hmm.
and.
More than 70.
Older than that. Probably not on the crisis care floor, but then if you look at all the different support we need in the nursery, we do have older volunteers and younger volunteers that come in as a group.
Mm-hmm.
So Boy Scouts that come in and clean for a day or help in the garden, Girl Scouts that did a shower and brought in all items on our wish list that we need in order to care for the children that are there, because we do need to care for them. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we tell parents to just get their children there safe. Don't bring formula, food, clothing. We have everything there to do that, and the community sees to it that we do. And so our volunteers really range in age. But if you want to actually come and care for children and help us in crisis care, then you need to be 18 years of age.
Did I hear, I thought I heard you say that you have as many as 100 volunteers?
We do 150. I mean, that's just in the crisis care program as well, and Jenny can speak about the other programs where we need volunteers, the other special events and activities that we do that need volunteers, getting our newsletter out.
Just to get clear, it's a remarkable number, 100 that do work within a given week or a month? Or
so we have 150 that rotate through our doors. Hopefully, that's a wishful number. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it goes up and sometimes it goes down.
When students
we have that many
town.
Spaces.
Yes.
So for seven
correct.
Days, there's two-hour slots, and we will fill those two-hour slots. And a volunteer would be asked to sign up for a two-hour slot that would be continuous. So every week they would come during that period of time.
Just like a
job.
As long as
they can. And I was telling you earlier, we have had we have volunteers at the nursery who have been there for the 13 years. They were there when I came.
And the availability of volunteers goes up and down, presumably with the academic calendar around here.
That's correct.
Right?
Yeah, about 60% of our volunteers are university students or Parkland students. And then we've really been having a strong initiative to try to bring in more community volunteers, and that's mm-hmm. been growing. So we're at about 40% of them now, because they stay and they don't go. We let them go on vacation, but mm-hmm. they have to tell us first.
We have a caller. Hello. You're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question?
Hi, it's me again. I know in hospice we had questions about faith, and this is Keeping the Faith program. So I wonder how you handle the religious issue with the kids.
Good question.
The religious issue?
Are there any concerns about the way you deal with children? Medication, I assume, is one that might be on the caller's mind, or I don't know. Are there any other issues that parents' faith might have an effect on, if you knew what it was, or if it was expressed?
We haven't really run into any issues
no.
of that nature. If you mean something like not giving we don't give medication at the nursery other mm-hmm. than
minimal.
Minimal. If a child comes in with Tylenol from the end of a cold, but we don't take sick children, so and contagious. You know, that's
so the issue of
one of
medication
our restrictions.
Doesn't come up.
So it doesn't come up in mm-hmm. that regard. Mm-hmm. If we have an emergency health problem that comes up with a child that we're having our care, we have emergency numbers for the family,
mm-hmm.
and we call the family because we're not taking guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
We're not taking over the role of the parent. In
mm-hmm.
those situations, we go back to the parent, and the parent takes over.
I'm not sure what the caller meant to ask. The only other thing I can imagine is, are there any faith-related instruction or approaches that you make to the children?
No.
Such as prayer or
no.
religious education?
No.
You're essentially a neutral, secular
right.
Organization.
Right. And that's an interesting thing. I could jump to something. We're right in back of Pervena, and Pervena Hospital has been a generous benefactor to the nursery ever since we left Burnham Hospital when
mm-hmm.
Burnham closed. They provide in-kind support to us of about $30,000+ a year. They are tremendously supportive, but they are a religious
Catholic
mm-hmm. hospital. There is not an issue with us, and they don't dictate any religious mandates to us.
Mm-hmm.
We are not affiliated with them in any way. I have a board of 23 board members that are separate from the hospital. We're our own 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when I first came, there was a lot of confusion, I think, in the community was, were we part of Pervena? No, we're not. And we are not a religious facility at all.
So you're not a faith-based organization, to
no.
use the current vernacular?
No, we're
vernacular.
Not. We,
okay.
try to, we certainly try to respect the diversity of people's faiths, of people's ethnicity,
mm-hmm.
Of people's family traditions. We make a strong effort to do that individually with children.
Back to administration, is there a board, overseeing entity of some sort?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have a board of 23 members, and they are extremely active in the nursery. They definitely understand and work very hard at trying to support the nursery fiscally and bring in monies to the nursery in every kind of way. We have a tremendous board. They're all involved in some kind of a committee. We do a lot of committee work, a lot of and then so that our board meetings are actually only an hour because everybody's working in committee and then bring back to the group. I also have about 10 people that are community committee members who don't have the same commitment as a board member as far as time, but that are attached to a different committee, like a publications committee or development committee or special events committee. And all my board members participate in both of our major special events that we use as fundraisers, and that's our dinner auction in the summer and our children's holiday shop in the winter.
Has it already happened this summer?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Yes, it did. It happened in June, but now we're gearing up for our children's holiday shop at Lincoln Square, which is, I've been told, a family tradition for many people.
What is that?
That will be the weekend. It starts the weekend after Thanksgiving, and it runs for 3 weekends. And kids can come to the shop and spend their money buying things for their loved ones, but their parents can't come in, so they have they get a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a nice a lesson for children in how to manage your money too. You know, they have a list of things people they want to buy for. They have items they can buy up to $6 and.
Or some
fun.
Creativity on the shopper's helper.
We use over 400 volunteers in that shop, including board members, but also other people.
Is this one of those boards that not only makes decisions but works as well?
I have a strong working board, and they are very well aware of what we do at the nursery. I am very share a lot with my board, so they understand.
It occurs to me, before we get to parent education, do you have a sense of unmet need here? If you had all the money in the world, you could wave a wand. Do you have a sense it's a much larger need out there? Are you turning people away, for example?
At this point in time, we still do have some turn away. When we built our building in 1991 and did a capital campaign for that, or 2001, I'm sorry, we built a big new building because we were turning people away. We were in a small house that Provena donated to us, and we had a license for 7, and we were turning kids away that were in need. We have two categories, actually, for turnaways. One is that it's not appropriate use, and one is that we're either full or our ratio is full. So we do still have that.
Frequently?
Every month we have. Do you offhand know the number this month?
Sure, it's 3 or 4 every month on an average. But you know, it's interesting to think.
Away?
Yeah, it's interesting to think about turning people away because we don't just turn them away. It sounds so.
Right. Can't come through this door.
Exactly. That's it. There's always light at the end of the tunnel. So every call that comes in, there's always hope that's given to that family. We always find a way to meet their needs in some way. So if we need to reprioritize crisis care, we do many, many referrals. Even if they do get crisis care, they get referred into our family program or to out into the community for their needs that we can't meet.
So. Why don't we talk a little bit about the family program? But let me, before we do, just reiterate. Our numbers are, if you'd like to call in, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Your family program includes, among other things, I assume, parent education and parent support. Is that right?
It does.
I got that right? Okay.
It does.
What does it involve?
Well, our family program is actually referred to as nurturing the family, and it's exciting. It's growing in the past couple of years. And it started with when I came on board to the nursery in 97. We had a support group in Champaign on Tuesday nights for mothers with children who found themselves in crisis and needed more support, needed the support of others, peers, and it's run by a facilitator here in Champaign. And then an additional support group was added in Rantoul with the same agenda, with a facilitator that meets on Thursday evenings. And then we had some parent education in the community that dealt with issues as far as discipline, working with your children to go back to school or different issues that parents would want to bring to the table. And then about a year ago, we started looking at our philosophy. And with the parents' interaction with infants' philosophy, there's a parent-child interaction group component. And so we added that piece, and we can actually hold it in the nursery on site, which is the only family programming that happens on site. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
With that, so parents come once a week, and it's very educational as well as supportive and supporting the parent and the child and the bond and educating the parent on what to expect from their child, how can they support their child where they're at developmentally and further their growth and feel competent and confident as parents. And that meets once a week. And when they come to group, they can also have planned respite in the crisis care program to support them as families, as an incentive to come to group or as a way to acknowledge their attendance and their time spent learning about their child and making that bond stronger. And so they bring their child for 4 hours to the crisis care program. And then each week a family worker goes out and works with them individually as families on any sort of problem that the parent might have, from potty training to child safety, child-proofing their house, to sibling rivalry, many different issues that parents might want just individual help on. The family mm-hmm. worker will go to the house and work with them.
Is this? Do these groups meet at the crisis nursery or elsewhere?
And they do.
So you have enough room to do that?
Mm-hmm. Barely.
That group meets in our conference room, the same room our board meets, and we move the tables aside, and the moms and babies and workers are on the floor and interacting with each other and being reinforced and in a positive for their positive behaviors and things. It's a really fun group. We do one with infants and we do one with toddlers.
Mm-hmm. Do you monitor that program? What kind of can you determine? Do you have a way of determining its beneficial effects? I don't know how you evaluate it.
We do. We do a couple of things for the parents and the child before they start into the program. We do an ages and stages, which is a developmental questionnaire that's very parent friendly to help the parent learn where the child is upon going into the group. And then we also have a survey that we ask many different questions that target three performance indicators, being parental stress, has that been reduced, parent education, and risk of maltreatment, so decreased risk of maltreatment. And we ask each of those parents to fill out that questionnaire upon entrance and exit of that program. So those are a couple of the scales that we use at this time, but we're looking into getting more tools to evaluate the effectiveness of that group.
Mm-hmm. And we're also involved in a research study with Susan Cole at the School of Social Work at the university. And she's we've done a data collection for the last 5 years that we've had Department of Human Service funding and follow a lengthy collection of data.
Longitudinal study?
Yes. It's data collection of the five different nurseries together so that we track how many admissions, age of children, reasons for placement, those kinds of things. So that can help us really profile what nurseries do and who the clients are that use them. Then the next stage in this, though, would be longitudinal studies of actual clients.
So that's down the pike.
That's down the path.
I see.
Pike, yeah.
What are you hoping to figure out or observe?
Well, we're hoping to prove. Prove, actually, we know, but we need to be able to show the community and show funders, show policymakers that this need exists and that crisis nurseries can meet a need for families to help them support their family, help them improve their family functioning, their family interaction, help children to develop in a more positive manner, perhaps. You know, those are the kinds of things that we believe that crisis nurseries offer to children and families in the community. And we need to prove that. We know we need to do that. It's one thing to say, oh, we do it,
intuitive,
and it's wonderful
anecdotal.
What we do. Mm-hmm. But we are very accountable in terms of tracking what we're doing. And we want to continue as a group to show the results of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about the families and the children. I understand that it is not the case that you primarily deal with abused children, but there's a whole other set of categories that you have. What kind of families and children are you accepting?
Actually, we don't deal with abused children. We deal with children that have not been abused, and we don't want them to be abused or to be hurt or at risk of harm in any way. So we are really pre-losing your cool, pre-hurting your child. And that's what we're trying to support, that if you bring your children to us before you lose it, we'll help you get through that period where it won't happen. And so it is true prevention of child abuse and neglect. It's primary prevention. Mm-hmm. At our nursery and most nurseries, we're also able to say, any child at risk of harm, you can be at risk of harm, not just because your parents are losing it and they might hurt you, but and many of us, I think, know what that means. You know, when your kids have really punched those buttons and you're in a really bad stage in your day or your life, mm-hmm. it's sometimes people really want to lash out at their kids, and you can't do that. That's not okay. So that's one population we really seek to serve, and that's our primary population. But then also, if you have an accident or your house burns down or you have to go in the hospital and you don't have any support, no one is there to help you out and to take your kids, you know, the child can be at risk of harm with no fault of yours. And that's a group of people we serve. Laura touched on the daycare crisis. We sort of define the daycare crisis as someone who, say they have a job, they don't have benefits, they can't, something happens and they lose their daycare. They're going to lose their job. If they lose their job, they don't have any income, they can't feed their kids. So you just take that down the road and say, where does that leave the family? Mm-hmm. That can be a DCFS kid. And why should that happen? When someone could intervene and voluntarily help out with the care of the child, and then we also help the mom find another daycare. We do, you know, linkage and those kinds of things.
So just to clarify, this is an intermediate step before DCFS, a child is assigned to DCFS, or if I got it right,
hopefully,
I'm not sure.
Hopefully it prevents DCFS from ever being involved.
Got it.
Because there's no need then. I mean, why should DCFS be involved if the child is not being hurt and the family's taking care of their problems?
But there are other criteria where DCFS would have to be involved and you not.
Oh, well, if a child was being abused, if a child came into us and had marks all over their face and, you know, and their back, and they said, my mom hit me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reportable. We're mandated reporters.
Right.
Of course,
you
know, they had cigarette burns all over their face. I mean, of course mm-hmm. we would report that. And that we would, you know, that's when DCFS would be involved. But those are not generally the children that we are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing the family who calls up and says, I can't stand it anymore. I have to get away from my kid or I might hurt them. That's the prevention piece mm-hmm. that we really
Or I need support.
Strongly support.
You know, I'm going through something that is taking everything out of me, and I know that I'm not giving my child what I want to give them, so I need someone to support me to be the parent I want to be and can't be right now in this time of my life. So the crisis nursery steps in and supports that family.
Well, I must say I understand it better now. I would assume, given what you just said, that this is a service for all levels of families, all kinds of families.
Oh, you bet.
Exactly.
You bet. And it's interesting. We are really a service, and we track income, we track race, we track all kinds of, you know, descriptive data. But we do serve a lot of people that don't have a lot of money because they have larger needs. But we also serve people that do have money. They just, there's no resource available when they need it, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. One of our really sort of fun crises is when a couple is having another baby and they, grandma's supposed to come from out of state, and baby comes about a week early, and they have a three-year-old, and where's grandma? She hasn't gotten there yet. And so they'll call us up in the middle of the night. I mean, maybe they don't know anyone else to call, or they don't want to impose on someone else to, in the middle of the night to take their three-year-old, but, you know, they'll bring them to us. And that's sort of a really a nice way to do that.
You use the term inappropriate placement. What would be inappropriate?
Babysitting.
That just occurred to me.
We're not babysitters, you know. You know, I want to go out with the girls, or I've actually had calls where somebody wants to go out to dinner for a holiday with the in-laws and don't have a babysitter. Well, I'm sorry, but that is not a crisis. And that takes a spot from somebody who has a real crisis.
Right, right.
So we don't do that.
Well, let's get back to a couple of things in just a minute. Before we get too close to the end, I wanted to take a minute to announce an upcoming event that the University YMCA is involved in. This is the Days of Remembrance, which is a commemoration of the Hiroshima-Nagasaki bombings. And the University YMCA is one of several co-sponsors for this event. It runs from August 6th through the 9th, 2005, and it'll mark the 60th anniversary of the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan. There are 18 faith organizations in Champaign-Urbana that are sponsoring Days of Remembrance to commemorate the victims of the bombings and many innocent people who die and suffer as a result of war, as well as to consider ways to work for a peaceful world. The first event, for those of you who are interested, will be a lecture by Professor Frederick K. Lamb entitled Countering the Threat of Nuclear Terrorism, and it will take place on Friday at 7 p.m. at Loomis Laboratory. Parking will be available at the Physics Building, and then there is a second event that will feature educational activities for children and adults, culminating with the floating of peace lanterns at Westside Park. These activities will begin on Tuesday, August 9th, at the First United Methodist Church, 210 West Church Street in Champaign. And this will start with the showing of a film entitled Sadako and the Thousand Paper Cranes. The film is appropriate for ages 8 and above, and it is a true story of an 11-year-old Japanese girl who contracted leukemia as a result of exposure to radiation from the atomic bomb when she was 2 years old. Following the film, there will be opportunities to decorate the peace lanterns and make paper cranes, write peace messages in Japanese, and write peace haikus. And then at dusk, the participants will process from the church to Westside Park, where there will be a ceremony involving the floating lanterns that will take place. And it's based on a Buddhist tradition. And it involves the luminaries, as the lamps are called, that will be a way to remember the victims of the bombing and to send forth prayers of peace. So wanted to let you know, if you're interested in those upcoming activities, please feel free to call the University of YMCA for more information and to participate. Well, why don't we talk a little bit here in our last few minutes about your hopes and dreams for the future of Crisis Nursery. Where would you like to see it go?
Well, we want to be able to stay around and continue to provide this kind of service to the families and especially the children in our community. That is a challenge every year as costs rise, and you know, with the ratio we have of government versus public money, you know, it's a challenge. We are fairly stable. Yes, we're very planful. We're very frugal. A lot of people think we have a lot of money, but that's not the case. But we do have a lot of contributors. And every year we seem to come out without, you know, deficiting, which is great. We've also, we are very good at being willing to ask for help, just like we encourage our clients to ask for help. We think that's a sign of strength, and we have a wish list of things we need. So, for instance, I never buy diapers. I mean, the community donates diapers. People bring diapers in. So all the diapers we use at the nursery are given to us. We don't have to pay for that. We do our own janitorial work. With Provena's in-kind support, that's a tremendous help. I mean, they shovel the walks. They provide security, many, many things like that. But we're trying very hard to make sure that all the dollars we get are going to be serving the kids and the families that we serve. And that my staff, I think, have joke about the fact that if they want something, they know that I'm going to say, have you tried to get it donated first before I'll ever approve mm-hmm. getting it bought? And, you know, that works. I mean, it's sort of like squirreling away the money you've got and trying to get your mm-hmm. resources met in a different way. So we do that. But I think another really dream we have is to be able to work more with infant mental health. We feel that the environment we have and the kind of service we have and the place we have it, and I sure hope people would come by and visit us or take a field trip to Crisis Nursery and find out, really see it for yourself. But that environment is a perfect environment for helping families grow healthy children. And the whole infant mental health issue that we keep seeing on the coming up in the state all the time as an issue is something we feel we're well-placed to help be involved with. We also are very, very serious about helping other areas develop crisis nurseries. Is this really, prevention is where it's at. And, you know, you put an investment in at the beginning, and eventually it's going to help us all in terms of dollars and in terms of our social fabric. And
you mentioned five in the state of Illinois, Peoria, Springfield, mm-hmm. and?
Peoria, Springfield, Rockford, Bloomington, and Urbana.
None in Chicago?
No, not in Chicago. I think I definitely know of a couple groups that are trying to start something up there, because I've consulted with them. Mm-hmm. But there's just nothing of this nature. You know, they may have some on again, off again, some church based things that exist. I think there's one crisis nursery kind of a agency that's part of a drug abuse treatment center for women. It's only for their population, but really the keynote of crisis nurseries, it's for the entire community. It's not for somebody that's a specialized problem.
What's the limit of your service area, by the way?
If you can get to us.
Oh, I see.
I mean, you know, we basically serve Champaign County, but we also have families that come up from Tuscola, families that come from Danville, families that come from Ford County. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we don't have a restriction on where you live, but we're center based. So we're mm-hmm. we're in Urbana. We're center based. You have to be able to get to us, mm-hmm. and we also don't have a dollar restriction because we're free.
As you're going to say, there is no cost. I don't think we've mentioned that to parents or families, right?
Right. Yeah, we didn't mention that.
There's no sliding scale.
No sliding scale.
To pay
we
or
don't
anything.
Even ask people that. But mm-hmm. we talk about what their crisis is. How can we help? When can you get here?
That's never been an issue in the past regarding ability to pay for families.
No,
never.
No. You know, it's really interesting. We get a lot of United Way designations. And when I see the list come through of people that have donated, I mean, you see this $52, and you're talking about 52 weeks. I mean, and I see the names of people I know have been clients, and they're donating a dollar a mm-hmm. week. through their job, you know, because that's all they can do. And they couldn't write a check for $52.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or clients bringing in their children's items that they've grown out of, or clients bringing in saying, I want to do something, and so bringing in a package of diapers and doing something even though the service is free, mm-hmm. doing whatever it is that they can do to support.
We just have a couple of minutes left here. Why don't we open this up to more general issues? You mentioned that you have seen such a significant increase in stress, and this is due to economics. Does this have anything to do with our national and state policies? Do we have a little attention to pay to priorities here for children? And we just have a very short amount of time here.
Well, I guess I'm biased, but I would certainly say that child care in general, and certainly emergency child care and family support, is not reflected in our budgets, in our state or our federal budgets very strongly. Mm-hmm. And I personally, I feel that this is something our country needs to address. We need to take care of our children and families because they're the foundation of our society.
Do you, when you talk to people in other centers, are there policies that you would like to see implemented statewide or nationally that are not in effect now?
Oh, you know,
what would you like to see from government?
I would like to see more dollars available to help for the infrastructure of our citizens and our children and our, you know, our families. Mm-hmm. I definitely would like to see that. And I think, you know, in other countries you do see that.
In Europe, the support is significantly higher, I think you mentioned to me earlier, in other countries as well.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I very much appreciate you all being with us. We have had Janine Duar, I'm sorry, right?
Right.
Duar, Executive Director of the Crisis Nursery here in Champaign, and Laura Swinford, Program Director. My name is Don Nolan. I'm substituting for Steve Shoemaker today. Thank you very much for listening to Keeping the Faith. See you again next week.
And thank you.